As you turn to Luke 4, starting at verse 31, I might note that from Luke's point of view, of course, I think Isaiah 61 is the background against which we should read the text for the fourth Sunday after the Epiphany, but it didn't take long in listening to Tom talk about Jeremiah to see the number of connections that are there as well. Themes, maybe more so than specific passages, but the whole idea of being set apart for something, the idea of God's Word coming to someone, who can speak, who can't speak, and even thinking of Luke as a whole, you see the interesting connection with Jesus as the child who doesn't say, look, I'm just a kid, what can I do? But already, before he's old enough to be away from his mom and dad, he says, this is what I have to be doing. I have to be about my Father's business. Okay, in Luke 4, 31 to 44, we have a series of incidents or episodes, and the preacher may decide to choose one and focus on that, or to simply see the whole passage as a kind of summary introduction to who Jesus is. After Jesus' first sermon in Nazareth, 16 and following, we now watch Jesus sort of leave church and go out and actually do the things that the prophets said he would do and that Jesus himself has said he would do. So these incidents in our text all occur in and around Capernaum. Jesus is working there. There's no picture yet of disciples or even a faithful following. He pretty much is completely on his own. At least that's the way the stories are told at this point. He does meet Peter and goes to his home. And yet that's, in Luke's telling, a kind of prelude to Simon Peter's calling to be then a full-time disciple and follower of Jesus. At the end of the text, we see Jesus leaving Capernaum, and we'll have to talk a little bit more about that when we get there, but that hints at an expansion of this Galilean ministry that Jesus is now going out. He has many places that he has to go and preach the good news to. Okay, let's begin at verse 31. Kai kat eilthen eis Capernaum polin teis Galileas. Okay, so remember he had been in Nazareth and now he's going down to Capernaum. Fitzmyer points out that Capernaum is actually below Nazareth in terms of sea level. So Luke here seems to know what he's talking about despite his many critics who complain about his lack of knowledge of Palestinian geography. But Jesus goes down to Capernaum. Kai ein didaskon autus entois sabbasin. Evi ein didaskon, you'll notice, is a periphrastic use of the participle here. We'll see that twice in our passage. This shouldn't be hard for us to understand because English does this exactly the same way, where you have ein, the imperfect, as a helping verb, and then the main verb in terms of content as a participle, here the present participle of didasko. So we translate it just like our normal English expression, he was teaching. This sort of use of two verb forms where you really only need one tends to put some emphasis on the aspectual force of the tense here, so that Jesus was habitually doing this. This was his custom. He was constantly doing this. And there's some question when Luke uses sabbasin, which is actually the plural, does he mean more than one Sabbath or simply one day? Now here it's very hard to tell because Luke, like New Testament authors in general, often use the plural of sabbaton to mean just one Sabbath. But here with Jesus' custom of teaching, perhaps it means this was his regular Sabbath custom to be teaching. Okay, verse 32, Kai exeplaisanta epi te didache autu. And they, again, who are the they? Well, here it's pretty clear, the people who were hearing this teaching of his, they are amazed, overwhelmed, and the epi gives the cause of this at his teaching. Here it could be either the content of what he said or the manner, the way in which he was teaching, and it's probably intended to include both of those things. So Jesus's whole method and message overwhelmed or amazed the people. Hoti en exousia ein ha logos autu. A very literal translation, a word-for-word kind of translation would be, because in authority or with authority was his word. And here the en exousia is really, Wallace creates a special category for this, but the meaning is pretty clear. It means his word possesses authority. So his word comes with, he teaches, he speaks with authority. We'll see exactly what kind of authority in the episodes that follow. Okay, verse 33, Luke chapter 4. Kai ente synagoge ein anthropos echon pneuma daimoniu akathartu. And in the synagogue there was a person having, now this is a little bit strange here, pneuma diamoniu akathartu, having a spirit of an unclean demon. Normally we would just say who had an unclean spirit or who had a demon. Why does Luke add so many extra words here? Again, that's sort of hard to tell. The idea is clearly that this person was controlled by this unclean spirit. Is the pneuma his spirit or the demonic presence? It could be either one. But whichever way we want to look at it, what was controlling the man's spiritual life was this unclean demon. Unclean demon isn't necessarily redundant either. Remember that in the wider Hellenistic world, demons were not universally considered bad. So demons could serve positive purposes. In Scripture, of course, they're always pictured as in opposition to God and His power. But Luke may simply be making that more clear for a broader audience. Okay, so this man was being controlled then by this demon. And anekroxen phone megale. Okay, so the man or the demon, well, it's obviously going to be the demon's thoughts that are being expressed through the man, cries out with a great voice. Fitzmyer says, screamed at the top of his voice. Obviously disrupting the liturgy. How do you translate that? Ah, or ha. Apparently an exclamatory particle that can express surprise that finally the demon meets this one, or displeasure. So we might combine those and simply say it's an unpleasant surprise. Ti hemin kai soi, what is there to us and to you? What do you and we have in common? We see this question in a number of places in the Gospels. Here it's not simply expressing the fact that we have nothing in common, but it's showing that there is actually real hostility here. What do you want with us? What do you have to do with us? We know that you're the other side. Jesus, that one from Nazareth. Eilthes apolesai hemas. There, Eilthes, of course, those of you who've been studying Greek know that that's one of the most common irregular verbs, the aorist of erchomai. Here it's the second person singular. Did you come, apolesai, with an infinitive of purpose here, to destroy us? Maybe this is the uprooting and the tearing down that's going to happen in this text. That God's spokesman will, we might say, yank this demon out by the roots. Okay, we know who you are. Oida satis e. Now remember how striking this is, because at this point in the gospel, how many people know who Jesus is? No one really. But they know who he is. Ha hagias tu theou. We'll see in a summary statement at the end another way that the demons will label this Jesus from Nazareth. But here he's called the Holy One of God. Now, this is not really an Old Testament title. And I'll ask Tom to correct Fitzmyer if he's wrong. But the meaning here is clear. We see it of Jesus more than once in the New Testament. Here, I think we should see this as not a statement of his personal sinlessness, but here is the one set apart by God to carry out his purposes. This is just like the consecration of Jeremiah, which didn't render him perfect in a moral sense, but said, you are the one through whom I'm going to work. Well, we know you, Jesus. You're the one that God has set apart to accomplish his will. Okay, 35, kai epitimesen auto ha Jesus legon. And Jesus, here we have the verb epitimao, which is translated by the lexica as rebuke or reprove. But Fitzmyer, I think, again makes a good comment here that this is really part of the technical vocabulary of exorcism. So that Jesus isn't just scolding the demon, but he's going to give him a charge and the demon will obey. So Jesus charged him, that is the unclean spirit in the man, saying, Phimotheti, from Phimao, which originally meant to muzzle. So here, what would we say? Put a cork in it. Be muzzled. Be silent. It's a passive command. Be silent. Kai exeltha, and come out from him. Now you can see he's speaking directly to the demon, and the op autu then is from this poor man. Kai ripsan auton, the demon really throwing a kind of childish tantrum here, throws the man on the floor in the midst of them, and he comes out, exhalthen op autu, exactly then as he was commanded. But notice the final clause there, maiden blapsan auton, without doing the man any harm. He harmed him in nothing. So his display of power, of control, is not able to harm this man now that the word of Jesus stands over him. The ace tomeson is one way Luke indicates that this happened publicly, visibly. There were witnesses to this. This was a real and true miracle. Continuing then, verse 36, Kai agenata thambos. Okay, and all beginning Greek students know to translate this, and amazement happened. Amazement came upon them all. Epipantas, kai synelalun pros alelus legontas. So they were talking among themselves, talking together to each other, saying, tis halagos houtos. What kind of word is this, or what is this word? Hoti en exousia kai dyname epitase tois akaphartois pneumasin kai ex erkontai. Okay, so what is this word? For with exousia, authority, kai dyname, power, epitase, he commands. And you can see a little bit here the etymological roots of the word. He establishes order upon them. He exerts his control. He brings them within their proper bounds. He commands the unclean spirits, and they come out. The connections here with authority and power take us back to some of the things that have already been stated about Jesus. He comes back from the wilderness in the power of the Spirit. This is the one, I think Fitzmyerian says it nicely, he is the Spirit-guided agent vested with the power of God who now dominates the world of evil opposition. Okay. Verse 37, Kai exa peruata hekos peri autu espanta topon tes perikoru. Began to go out, or there started to spread this report, this sound about Jesus, this rumor or story, periautu, concerning him into all the place of the region, or every place of the region. Okay, that's verse 38. This is the next episode now. Anastas de apates synagoges. Here Luke leaves out a verb we would expect, anastas from anistemi. The aorist participle, having gotten up. But Luke just says, from the synagogue. The idea here, of course, is he gets up and leaves the synagogue. Eis eilthen. There's our erchomai in the aorist again, now with the preposition eis in front of it. He went into the house of Simon. Luke does use Peter more than any other name for Simon Peter, but at this point, Simon hasn't been given his new name, and so Luke refers to him as Simon. Luke, by the way, never uses the Aramaic Cephas for Simon Peter. Okay, so after church, they go home to Simon's house. Penthera de tu Simonas, ein synecomene Pireto megalo. Penthera is the mother-in-law of Simon. Here we see once again the periphrastic verb plus participle. I guess there are three then altogether. So she was being tormented by. This verb can speak of a lot of different situations, but here it's sort of a group of things coming together and being with her to cause her distress. The greatest of those, the pireto megalo, the great fever. This is not just she was a little under the weather, but this was a serious illness and would take a serious remedy. Kai erotezon auton peri autes. And they beseeched him or asked Jesus concerning her, not just in the sense of, is she going to get better, but asking Jesus to do something to help her. Who are the they? Well, we import our parallels from other Gospels here and immediately think of Jesus and the other disciples. But remember, Luke has not mentioned any other disciples at this point. That doesn't mean it's impossible, but in this context, who would the they most naturally be? It sounds like Simon and his mother-in-law. I mean, it's the people in the house. Jesus, please help her. Kai epistas epano autes. So, epistemi, you see the epistas is the second aorist participle. Here it means to stand at the top of something, not obviously stand upon someone, but here is it standing at the head of her bed. That's the way most interpreters will take it, but it could just as well mean Jesus is leaning over her the way a doctor or caregiver might. So having stand over her, he epitimeson, timeson. We see our same verb here. Jesus charges the fever just the way he commanded the demon. So he gives it a charge, which it cannot but obey. Kai afeken, and it left her. Autain. Para chrema de anastasa diakone autois. And immediately, anastasa from anistemi, now she gets up again. And the diakone begins to serve them. continues her service toward them, something like that. And the verb can, in its narrow sense, of course, mean to serve them dinner, something like that, but it can also mean a more general kind of service as a member of the household. The point Luke wants to emphasize is that this healing was complete. She didn't need a couple of days to recover. It's like the fever broke or something like that. But immediately she was able to return to full service, which was also then the outward proof of the healing. Okay, one more episode and then a kind of a summary statement. In verse 40, Dinon tos datou heliou. As the sun then was setting, going down, hapantas hazoi echon astanuntas nazois poikilais egagon autus pros auton. So as the sun was setting, everybody, whoever, the hapantas is an emphatic form of pas, hazoi, the correlative, everybody, whoever, Achon was having astanuntas, people suffering from illnesses, from poikilais nazois, all kinds of diverse illnesses. Agagon, they brought them to him. The sick people weren't bringing or coming, but their family and friends were bringing them to Jesus. Ha de heni hekasto auton tas keras epitethes etherapiu en autus. But he, that is Jesus, heni hekasto, each and every one of them, epitethes, placing his hands from epitethemi etherapiu en, he healed them. It's interesting, commentators will point out that placing hands on people for healing is also not customary Old Testament practice. But as we saw in the Jeremiah text, who is always stretching forth his hand in the Old Testament? So, something to think about there. 41. Ex ergeta de kai daimonia apollon praugadsonta. And the demons were coming out from many of them, again crying out and saying that you are ha huios tu theou, you are the Son of God. Kai epitimon uk ea auta lalein, and Jesus again charged them, rebuked them, not allowing them to speak, because they knew him to be the Christ. There you see, eideson. Remember, oida is perfect, though we translate it like a present. So the pluperfect here, simply like an imperfect or simple past. They knew auton, accusative subject with the infinitive eini. They knew him to be the Christ. Okay. Verse 42, genamenes de hemeras exelthon eporuthe es eremon topon. When it was day, that is, when the next day came about, or morning, going out, Jesus journeyed or traveled into a deserted place. Very quickly, Luke has already used poruomai, in his special sense back in verse 30. But this is the verb that he will use throughout the gospel to describe Jesus' journey toward Jerusalem. He has begun this trip already, and he will not be distracted from it, and that's what this summary statement is about. So you don't really have to wait for the journey section to begin. Jesus is already expressing a strong sense of purpose. So in this concluding section, we have both poruomai and the little impersonal verb dei. It is necessary. Those are two key signals in Luke that Jesus is being driven not by his own agenda, but by the will and purpose of his Father. It's unfortunate the new lectionary does not emphasize that until we get right to the Passion Week itself. So we don't get any of the Passion predictions until Holy Week. So I urge you preachers to help your people see how this is really the driving force behind the whole story here. So he goes out into this deserted place. Kai hoi okloi epezetun auton. The crowds were searching for him. Kai eophon heos. You notice here you have what's at times simply a conjunction used as a preposition. They came all the way up to him. That is, they searched and searched until they found him and came to him. Kai kat eichon auton. Here, this is an expression you may not remember. It doesn't occur that often. Kat echo in the sense of preventing someone from doing something. So they try to prevent him so that he does not go away from them. This is part of Jesus' ministry where he's very popular. The people want him around because he's doing great things among them. But he said to them, Ha de apen pros autus. Remember, we still don't really see disciples in the picture here. It's Jesus and the crowd. Hoti here giving the content of his statement. Kai tais heterais polisin euangelisas by med de tain basileon tu theou. So telling them that there are also other places where it is necessary for me to go and proclaim the kingship of God. Hoti epi tuta apostolin, because epi tuta, for this purpose, apostolin, I was sent. Kai ein keruson estas synagogas tes judaias. This is the last paraphrastic verb and participle we see, and he was preaching in the synagogues, tes judaias, of Judea. Now you'll notice there, if you're looking at a critical text, there are a lot of variants on this last word. Several manuscripts read Galileas, the synagogues of Galilee, and one manuscript at least, instead of Judea, has of the Jews. Was Jesus traveling in Judea? Well, Luke doesn't ever really describe that. Of course, if you read John, you know Jesus goes to Jerusalem several times before his passion. I think this is an interesting passage where Luke at least certainly allows for that, even though his focus is on Jesus' work in Galilee, and he doesn't really want to go into details about where exactly Jesus was traveling throughout this period. But obviously the reports about him are getting down into the area where his destiny will be met in Jerusalem and the leaders of the Jewish people. So in this text, just to try to wrap up briefly, we do see Jesus doing everything that was said of him and everything that he said he came to do. He preaches with authority. His word is the coming of God's reign or rule. Demonic powers cannot withstand him, neither can threats to human life. So in his presence, or in the presence of his word, comes salvation and life and wholeness again. And yet, Jesus did not come to do only these things. He can't just stay here and heal and teach. He must go on and carry out the work of proclaiming God's reign. And we know that that proclamation will include much more than simply his teaching. Okay, well, thank you.